Morning, folks. Welcome to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in this morning. My name is Bruce Dickey. I've got a guest across the way. You've been here a couple times. How many times do you think you've been here before, Travis? Probably half a dozen?
Probably half a dozen. I was just thinking that.
You got to figure, well, you know, we've been, how much have you accomplished? I guess that's kind of a mean question, isn't it, to start right out of the gate?
That is brutal.
I'm just teasing. It's a work in progress all the time, isn't it?
It is, and I think one of the major accomplishments that I would point to is that for the last two or three gubernatorial cycles, at least on the Republican side, lawsuit reform has been a major part of the gubernatorial candidates on the Republican side.
Certainly,
Bruce Rauner is carrying the torch in Springfield in the mansion.
Let's tell everyone who you are. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Travis Aiken. He's the executive director of Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Watch. That's basically a firm down in Marion, right? Headquartered in Marion.
That's where I live.
And we're online to folks. Where would folks find you online? Facebook or
A Facebook page, a Twitter account. You can get links to both of those pages at www.illawsuitabusewatch.org.
Where do folks find most information on the Facebook? What do you update faster? What are your folks up?
Probably Facebook fastest and Twitter some too. Although I'm more of a Facebook person than Twitter. So, yeah.
Well, Twitter works, but it doesn't really work for you in that. What you probably need to do is have more than 140 characters at a time for some of the stuff that you're talking.
Yeah,
about,
I don't like being limited to 140. Characters, and I like the combination of video and different things from Facebook. Yeah. I spend more time on Facebook than I do on Twitter.
You know, I'm not on Facebook at all. I've got privacy issues, I guess, with it, with Facebook. I'm afraid I'd put, and they're probably my own. I'm afraid I'd put too much of my own stuff out there. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Okay. Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Watch. Last week was Lawsuit Abuse Awareness Week, wasn't it?
Yes.
Tell me what all you folks were doing, you and your organization were doing to try to make people more aware. Where did you go?
We went all over. We were in Mount Vernon. We were in Vienna, as far south as Vienna, West Frankfort. Mm-hmm. We were in Carmi, McLeansboro, Grayville. We also spent some time in O'Fallon, and then we hit the Metro East areas there, Belleville and Edwardsville and Alton. And we got a lot of stares in Edwardsville and Belleville. Well, I had a huge billboard truck, an 8x8 sign.
Yeah, you've used that before, haven't you?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And I made it myself.
Uh-huh.
in my driveway.
Yeah.
And we went, it had a big sign about the importance of judicial elections, good judges matter.
Right.
And we handed out some literature at the different courthouses. You know, Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Watch is a nonpartisan organization, so we're not out telling people how to vote.
You want to make sure the folks are aware.
We want to make sure that people pay attention to these judicial elections. That's what the literature said, and we would go to the courthouse. We went to the courthouses there and handed them out. And, yeah, we did get some stares from some of the personal injury lawyers going in and out of the the courthouses.
I'll bet you do. I'll bet you do get a few of those attorneys probably say something.
The stink eye.
Get the stink eye.
And we can see people, too. It's funny because the windows in the courthouse have blinds. So you get
people. You see people moving blinds.
Peeking out from time to time. Because I'm sure when people get into the courthouses, they tell what's going on. And so people, you know, are staring at us. And we also get the thumbs up, too, from people going going by, past us because they recognize what's going on there in Madison and St. Clair County, and they're supportive of our efforts.
Do you give out leaflets and pamphlets and that kind of thing?
Yeah. We had a little brochure just about the importance of judicial elections and urging people to make informed decisions when they go to the polls and vote in these all important judicial races.
That's an interesting thing right now, especially here in Illinois, as we've got two judicial races just for the appellate court here, which is in Mount Vernon. But Mount Vernon covers that the east side, don't they?
37 counties.
The Metro East.
I've
had three of the candidates on the show in the last month or two. And in talking to these folks, they're just trying to get their name out. I mean, they're not known. And so what you're trying to do is making sure that people understand and know who they're voting for.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
Well, it takes a little time to go and research the different candidates on the ballot. But it's a worthwhile endeavor because judges do have a significant impact in our society.
Right. You don't think an appellate court judge is going to really have that big of an impact because they're not in a courtroom. You don't see them work, but what they're doing is behind the scenes, and that is where rules are made. Right.
Right. Well, I'll give you an example. There's a situation in St. Clair County where three judges who were up for retention decided to instead resign their positions,
right,
and then they filed papers to run for election for the vacant spots that they created. And so there was a some litigation filed against them that this was not
– You can't do that.
You can't do that.
The reason they – and let's explain to folks the reason they did that. The reason they resigned is because a retention vote is you got to get 60%.
Correct.
And they figure they'll probably have a better chance of getting 50% running against somebody or nobody.
Right. And they're all three, Democrats in a Democrat county. So their thinking is it'll be easier for them to win election.
Right.
But it was an associate judge in Sangamon County, an associate, not even a regular...
Not even an appellate judge.
Right. It was an associate judge in the circuit court in Sangamon County where this case was heard, and that associate judge ruled in favor of the plaintiffs, and that decision has held up every step of the way moving forward. And so, an associate judge serving in a circuit has the ability to make determinations on what's constitutional and what isn't.
Right.
And depending on the mood and the attitudes of the court, those decisions very often are held up by higher courts. The courts are reluctant at times to overturn and overrule lower courts. It happens a lot, but it's not terrifically common. No. And so you even at the associate judge level, you have someone who has who's basically
associate
that
judge
ruling
in a circuit court.
And a circuit court has changed the landscape of what it means to run for judge in the state of Illinois.
Basically changed the full meaning of the Constitution, because the Constitution says you run for retention, you got to get 60%, and to run for judge, you got to get 50%. And so, to be retained, you'd think 60. You don't just resign and then run for your spot again.
The plaintiffs in that case argued that the framers of the Constitution meant for the judges to run for retention. That's why they set the retention process up, and not
right
to resign their seat and run for election. But now, What's it's open season. It's open season. So I mean, you know, I'm not making a value judgment of what's right or what's wrong here. What I'm saying is that this judge, rightly or wrongly, has changed how judicial elections are going to be done in the future in Illinois, and that's just one example of the power of the judicial branch.
Yeah,
that, of
and
government.
That's the thing, and what your point is, folks need to know who they're electing.
Exactly.
To be able to give that kind of power. Right?
Right.
I'll be dog. So how far along is that? Is that did the Sangamon court went ahead and made that decision, the guy in the Sangamon, the judge up there?
Yeah, no, it's
did
a done
it go
deal.
To
it's
appellate?
A done deal.
So it,
so
it,
the appellate,
so the
court,
appellate refused to to look at it?
They ruled
they
with
–
they did look at it, and they sided with the with the associate judge and allowed – the three judges in St. Clair County to run for
did
election.
Did the Supreme look at it?
I don't believe it. No, I don't believe so.
Hmm. I didn't think it. I didn't know. I didn't realize it had been adjudicated by the appellate. I saw that one come out because that started. Some guy did that like in 2012. Was the first one to give these guys the idea, wasn't it? In St. Clair County.
Yeah. Well, there. I think. I don't know the exact history of I think you're right. I think there was something where somebody tried this before.
Yeah.
But this is certainly the first time that
went to court.
Right. And the first time that you had, you know, three judges
basically,
you know, from the same circuit trying this.
Flouting the Constitution.
Well, they wanted
in my non-legal opinion. apparently my non-legal opinion is disagreed by some folks, right? Apparently.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that if you're going to put this process in that says that you stand for election,
right?
And even if you're appointed, you still stand for election at some point,
right?
during your
yeah, even appointed
career.
Judges have to be elected again rather
right.
than retained,
right? Right. But once you're elected, then you run in a retention election. And why have retention if you can resign your position and run for election? It makes no sense.
Oh, but I'm certainly taking a beating on their seniority, though, Travis. I've got Travis Aiken here on the Bruce Dickey Show. He's the executive director of Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Watch. We're going to talk about all kinds of other things. We're also going to talk about frivolous lawsuits and other kind of stuff coming up here on the Bruce Dickey Show on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield. Back after these. Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390, WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. I've got across the way Mr. Travis Aiken. He is the executive director of Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Watch, a firm down here in southern Illinois. How much of the state do you cover? Are there other Illinois the Lawsuit Abuse Watches throughout the state?
Our organization is focused on the whole state. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you've got other folks that help you out throughout the
state.
Oh,
yeah. We have allies and friends and supporters throughout the state.
Yeah.
I was blessed this week to have a number of supporters work with me at the courthouses, and I couldn't do it without the help of our tremendous volunteers.
When you went to Carmi, I didn't hear anything about the Carmi and Hamilton County. Were you noticed the personal injury attorneys and the where you might see more abuses typically on the Metro East side? What did you find in the more localized places?
Well, what I did mostly in those communities is take pictures with the local mayors who had signed proclamations recognizing Lawsuit Abuse Awareness Week, and the mayors of all of those communities have been supporters, ILAW supporters for a long time, and have graciously signed proclamations. Going there was going into friendly territory.
Yeah,
for sure.
So the only unfriendly territories of New Metro East?
More or less, yeah. Which is not surprising.
Oh, that's yeah.
I talk a lot about what goes on there, and they don't like it. They like the
freedom.
Well, see what happens is, and every year, and we've talked about the Judicial Hellholes Report.
It doesn't hurt to talk about it more.
From the American Tort Reform Foundation. And every year, usually in December, they release a report ranking the top 6, 7, 8 worst judicial hellholes in the country. And
right.
What they define as a judicial hellhole is a place where judges systematically rule in favor of the plaintiffs, and they create these judicial hellholes. Well, in Madison County especially, you have a system there where you have personal injury lawyers who elect their friends and sometimes
right.
people within their own firms.
Right.
They put money into these campaigns. Those people get elected judge. Then those judges, in turn, make rulings in favor of the plaintiffs, which then puts more money into the pockets of personal injury lawyers who then reinvest that money
right.
into judicial campaigns. It's this ongoing, never-ending cycle of gamesmanship and abuse of our courts. We're trying to break that cycle. We're trying to expose it for what it is. And so when we go down there and we talk about how good judges matter, challenge voters to take judicial elections seriously, challenge them to look at who's funding these campaigns, and challenge them to pay attention to the kind of money that's going into a personal injury lawyer, into these judicial elections.
Yeah.
We just came out with a report in conjunction with the Illinois Civil Justice League showing that in the last 10 years, judges have put our personal injury lawyers have put $35 million into different political campaigns, many of those campaigns in Madison and St. Clair counties. And we're trying to, expose it for what it is, that the appearance seems to be that justice is for sale in
yeah.
Illinois. So that's a very sobering message. And of course, not one that's going to be particularly well received by the personal injury lawyers who are there in Madison and St. Clair counties.
Are you surprised then in this election, at least at the appellate level, that there has not yet been all that much pouring of money into any of the candidates, really, at least as of last month? I haven't really checked it more recently. But for instance, the last time there was an appellate seat at the Mount Vernon Court, which covers the Metro East side, you had several hundred thousand dollars thrown in on each side, and for the judge. And in this one, you've got several, maybe hundreds of dollars thousands, but not gigantic amounts of money.
No, we're not seeing the large dollar amounts that you would typically see
that we have seen
in the past here in the 5th District. And the 5th District is really a district that can go either way. Competitive
of the 37 counties, you've got
right.
like two counties that have all the lots of population, and the other 35 counties are mainly one party, and the other two counties are the other party, right?
that has kind of been the story in this district, and so it typically is a big battleground. I think what's going on here is just that the legislative races are sucking up so much money across the state that there's just not a lot of resources left over for these judicial campaigns. We're seeing
the Forby race. Yeah, the Forby race down there where you are is all kinds of money.
Oh, every commercial you see, especially if you watch the evening news, is a legislative race of one kind or another. I mean, it's just nonstop commercials on the television and on the radio too. I mean, it's just you can't escape it.
You can. I'll tell you how you escape it, Travis. You move to Wayne County. We've got no contest. It's great. We've got very, very little contest. We've got the presidential election. We've got the senatorial. There's no contest in the Congress. There's no contest in the in either Senate or representative. Or there is the judge contest, and that's about it. Move to Wayne County.
There you go. We've solved the problem. Move to Wayne County.
There you go. Glad to help in any way I can. Okay, you were mentioning earlier, and I kind of cut you off in the first segment. You've seen strides made by the governor as the awareness at the state level is getting you think more and more effective, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, have we gotten the legislation that we want to get passed? No, but
there's all kinds of legislation that ain't getting passed. Is it?
But there's a lot of unfinished business
in
Springfield. Yeah. Our issues, definitely one of them. But I think what I've seen and what we've been doing every spring is getting groups of people together to have a rally in Springfield. We do reception for legislators. Every year we've seen the number of legislators attending our event grow. And, so we're seeing a lot more interest in these issues, and we're seeing a lot more. And I think a lot of that is due to the fact that we have a governor who has made this a priority. Every year since he's been governor, I've been going to the state addresses and the budget addresses, and in each of those addresses, he mentions in some form or fashion lawsuit reform. In fact, I went to Governor's Day this year in Springfield, and again, he talks about personal responsibility. He talks about the need to reform our courts. These are constant themes in what the governor has to say. And I think having someone in the governor's mansion pushing these things is making a difference, because people are more likely, more interested in paying attention to the importance of lawsuit reform, because we have such a strong advocate in the governor. So I think we're getting closer, but we still have a long way to go.
How long have you been manager or executive director now of Illinois Lawsuit Abuse?
I started working with iLaw in 2007.
Okay. So that's back during the Blagojevich days. How much interest was there in this in comparison? This is 9 years later. How much interest in comparison to whenever you got started versus like now, when you say the governor, or not the governor, but you have legislators coming to your events? Did anybody do anything back in 07, or were you just basically walking into doors?
There was a lot less interest. Now in 2005, despite his objections, Rod Blagojevich did sign the medical malpractice reform legislation, mm-hmm. Which was the law of the land until the Supreme Court ruled it unconstitutional in 2010. But despite his objections, his own personal objections to it, he was forced to sign it because that's what the people demanded. And so we did have a very significant piece of reform legislation that got passed under Rod Blagojevich's watch. But that was really a movement of the people, and ILAW, even though I wasn't involved in the organization then, was definitely involved in pushing medical malpractice reform. And so, you know, we have a history here in Illinois when the people stand up and say, we need this, we want this, we demand that you take action on this. Yeah. That the legislature and the governor will respond. And so what I started doing in 2007 and what I've been continuing to do is try to build momentum, build a movement so that we can put pressure on legislators to get that going. And so, you know, some of the things that we're looking at doing in the future is working with legislators to make lawsuit reform a priority, to take a pledge to support lawsuit reform legislation. And I think this is going to be a good time to really launch some of those things because we're going to have a lot of new faces, new legislators in the General Assembly come January 1st.
How's the pledge
going? January,
January 11th or whatever.
Yeah.
How's the pledge going? I know you've been after trying to get legislators to sign that pledge for a while. Are you getting more?
We have strong supporters from a, you know, a good core group of legislators, and we want to. We probably have about a dozen really solid, committed lawsuit reform advocates, people who whose main issue are business issues and wanting to try to reform the state's business laws and regulations, and so they're certainly sympathetic and supportive of lawsuit reform.
I'm talking with Travis Aiken. He's the executive director of Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Watch, and that's a statewide organization that is working to help tort reform. And he's going to have – we've got some frivolous lawsuits, and he always brings us some interesting ones. We'll talk about a few of those when we return here on the Bruce Dickey Show. You are listening on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. Back after these. Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM, Fairfield, Illinois. Appreciate you tuning in. It's 9:46, 70 degrees on the way up to 80. Should be a very, very pleasant day. My guest across the way is Travis Aiken. He's the executive director of Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Watch. And last week was Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Awareness Week. He went all over the state. At least all over the southern part of the state, and was demonstrating and getting thrown in jail and, You never got thrown in jail, did you?
No.
Demonstrating and getting the stink eye from people all last week. You did get the stink eye.
We did get the stink eye.
Well, that's fine. But every time, Travis has been here a few times, and whenever he comes, we like to talk about the occasional frivolous lawsuit. What you got for us today, Travis?
Well, this is a case that actually just got resolved earlier this past summer. This is involving Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
They were sued for their song Stairway to Heaven.
Right. One of the iconic songs of all time. Goodness knows how much money they made with that song.
And it was brought by a lawyer representing the estate of the late guitarist Randy Wolf, who at the time was playing with a band called Spirit and playing under the name Randy California.
Okay. All right.
So they allege in the suit that the song, their song Taurus, the intro, there's a kind of an acoustic guitar played in the, in the intro, is similar to some of the riffs in Stairway to Heaven, and they allege that because they played at the same venue in 1968, that Led Zeppelin would have been familiar with the band Spirit and the song Taurus, and therefore copied it and used it in their song Stairway to Heaven.
What did they sue for? How much did they sue for? You recall there was like several million dollars. I'm trying to remember if they ever. I remember this lawsuit.
Yeah, the article I'm looking at does not.
I was trying to remember how much money they ended up saying that the Stairway to Heaven made, which was a tremendous amount of money for one song.
Oh yeah, well they're still getting royalties. It's still getting played all across
the
globe. Every
day. Classic rock hit.
Yeah,
it's a classic rock hit. Okay, so you want to hear us?
The lawsuit. It was a $40 million lawsuit.
Wow.
That's
a pretty nice chunk. Let's see what... So the first one we're going to play here is, I believe... This is... Let me restart that. I'm sorry about that. All right, this is Taurus. All right, play. There we go. This is the Taurus from Spirit. I'm sorry. Yeah, you got to put the headset on. So basically, it's a cascading down of music there, right?
Yeah.
When was this one written?
In the late
60s,
yeah.
By Gary California?
Randy.
Randy California.
Randy California, also known as Randy Wolf.
I got to tell you, knowing Stairway to Heaven, knowing the start of Stairway to Heaven, that doesn't sound much like it. It's got basically the cascade, right?
Yeah, you can kind of pick up a little bit with the guitar notes that there's some similarities, but it goes in a totally different direction with this song.
All right, now, okay, this is going to fade into the original Stairway to Heaven here, which is the Led Zeppelin. Now, that part sounds like it may be a little similar. Right, but then it leaves it. All right, so Randy California. When did Randy California die? Do we know that?
I just said the late.
Randy California.
Yeah, I don't know when. So this is a lawsuit on behalf of his estate and his heirs.
What was his real name? Randy
Wolf.
Randy Wolf.
But the thing about this case,
go ahead.
It was brought in 2014. It just got resolved in June of this year.
So it took 2 years, basically, to resolve.
2 years. And they sided with Led Zeppelin. So who knows how much they paid in attorney's fees. And
he died in January of 1997.
So almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And so it took 2 years to get this case resolved. And, you know, have you ever seen on the YouTube video where you have these musicians playing excerpts of the Canon in D? Paco Bell.
Yeah, Paco Bell's Canon in D. Sure.
Yeah.
I play that on the tuba, by the way.
Just to
throw you off a little, Travis. Yeah, I play that song. Yeah,
I'm just visualizing.
Yeah,
you.
I didn't mean to blow your mind. I realize you seeing me as a tuba player. That image is probably pretty tough now to get out of your head.
that is.
You were going to say about Canon?
Yeah,
and
yeah. So there's these musicians. They do this comedy routine, and they show how all these different pop songs are variations of Paco Bell's Canon in D, and they just go seamlessly into song after song after song, and these kind of lawsuits are amusing because you're asking judges who have no background in music whatsoever, right, to make these determinations. I mean, you know, if you listen to this, you can kind of hear a little bit of similarities.
Right.
But there was a lawsuit against Men at Work for their song "Down Under."
Oh, really?
And there's an old Australian folk song that a record company sued them over, and there's zero similarities between the two, but yet they ended up having to pay a lot of money
for attorney's fees anyway.
Well, no, they lost. They lost.
Oh,
the
really?
Suit. And I mean, I cannot hear any similarities between Down Under and this old Australian folk song. It's just bizarre.
So how'd the Led Zeppelin suit come out?
The judge ruled in favor of Led Zeppelin.
Jimmy Page.
Yeah. So they don't have to pay. They don't have to pay any of the
guy had been gone for 17 years. What in the world possesses him to file a lawsuit 17 years later? Did they not realize that it was a popular song in 1997 while Mr. California was still alive, Mr. Wolf?
They're going after the easy money. I mean, that's what frivolous lawsuits are.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to find a way to win the lawsuit lottery, and they gambled and fortunately lost. But I think when it comes to these kinds of things, these kinds of lawsuits, there's nothing really new under the sun.
Right.
Music is going to, there's always going to be similarities between, especially in the pop rock genre. Everything's based on things that have happened in the past, and people are always going to find some similarities, but it's not worth, in my view, filing a lawsuit and trying to cash in on somebody's popularity and creativity.
Well, that's amazing that goodness knows how much it took to litigate the thing.
Oh yeah, not to mention the time resources involved to fight this. It's ridiculous.
The thought is that this one is from Davy Graham, "Cry Me a River," from a previous documentary. This one's from 1959. See if you... Oh, I'm sorry. Here, I'll do that again while you've put the headset on and let you hear. So they're thinking, the thought was that the spirit guy might have got it from somebody else to start with. So, I mean, it's you just never know what the folks are going to be thinking. That's a good one. Ah, well, so when? What's the finish line?
Well, actually, you asked me if I have one more frivolous case. If we have, if
you
we
got
have
1 minute,
1 minute. Okay, I can do this. So you have a lawsuit. This is a Louisiana man filing in federal court in Illinois because he is blind and can't go through the McDonald's all night drive-through unless he has someone drive him. And what happened was he tried to go and order at the window. The employees said, no, you have to be in a car. We're not going to serve you through the drive-through window. And, of course, the inside of the store was closed. The only thing open was the drive-through. And so he's filing under the Americans with Disability Act a lawsuit against McDonald's, saying that they're discriminating against blind people by only having their drive-through open late at night. So when
when's that start? Has that one been adjudicated?
That has not been decided. That's an ongoing case. I talked a little bit about this.
That's
early,
an interesting
earlier this
one
summer
too.
On another show. But
that's an interesting one too. I'll keep an ear down for that one. Travis, thanks very much for coming up.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. We'll talk to y'all again tomorrow, folks, on the Bruce Dickey Show. Have a great day.